Hello, everybody. Jeff and I are going to be talking to you for the next hour. Jeff?
Not all, not just you and me. Don't want to start losing everybody, Corinne.
Oh, no, we can't have that.
We've got some very impressive people, I think, who are going to join us this evening or today, wherever we're at. Certainly welcome those who are not fellows of the IAFL, and there are many obviously who are joining us, and we welcome you obviously taking time out to join us.
We're hoping there'll be, I think 150 people have registered. Obviously not everybody will turn up, but we're going to have a big lot of people, so it'll be an interesting talk going forward. What Jeff and I will do is we will introduce ourselves as soon as we get a few more people on board, and then we'll go into the talk itself. I think we now have 60 people on. Is that right?
Yeah,
that's amazing. That really is. And just to give you an idea of the 150 people who have registered, I think we have 23 jurisdictions where the person who's registered is an IAFL member. We've got a few more jurisdictions where don't have an IAFL member registered for today's talk. But that's a lot of jurisdictions that are going to be on board today. I think we have a total of something like nearly 30 jurisdictions represented in today's 150 participants, which is amazing.
And Corinne, the coverage, Northern, Southern Hemisphere. I know a number of our colleagues joining us from Europe and the United States as well.
I think we have, I haven't worked out how many from each jurisdiction, but we have 9 jurisdictions in the Asia Pacific area represented by our AFL people. We have 14 from different jurisdictions in Europe, America, and the rest of the world. And we have another 6 jurisdictions without an IAFL member here today, which is amazing.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And I'm sure you're all desperate to ask questions, but I'm not sure we can get many questions in today. But we certainly will give you all the web links in case you do want to ask questions after the event. We'll see what time there is left at the end of the day. Perhaps we can deal with the nuts and bolts now. I'm Corinne Remedios. I am the president of the Asia Pacific of IAFL, and I'm a barrister, and I'm practicing in Hong Kong, which is where I was born and grew up. Jeff, would you like to introduce yourself?
Thank you. I'm a fellow of the IAFL, have been now for, just counting down, 13 years, lucky for some. I'm the president-elect of the Asia Pacific chapter, and I'm a partner of the Brisbane law firm Hopgood Ganim.
And Jeff and I do this regularly once a month for the AP hour, which is an hour-long meeting. It's informal like this, where everyone can be seen, they can talk, and we talk about some subject which is of importance, and we let everyone have a go and join in and chat. So that's one of the things we do now because we can't meet face to face. But normally IAFL have 3 or 4 meetings a year, one from each of the 3 chapters and one from the main body. And that's a wonderful time for us all to get together and talk. Many of us have met new friends, and many of us will meet more friends as time goes on. But unfortunately, like everywhere else in the world, we are unable to meet face-to-face for a time. So what we're doing now is to try to do this virtually. And the Asia Pacific chapter has started a newsletter to keep in touch. We'll let you have all the web links later on. Yeah? Oh, okay. So if you go into your chat, you can see Daphne's already put the web links there. So you got the IAFL website. If anyone's interested in the admissions criteria to join as an IAFL member, it's pretty stringent, but the criteria is there for you to have a look at. The frequently asked questions about admissions is there, and the admissions application forms there. So all those details, if you are interested in joining us, or if you want more questions, you can always look us up on the list, which is in the website as well, on Find an IAF Lawyer. That's all there. Daphne can also leave her email. Daphne, can you do that? So if anybody has any questions to ask or any follow-up from the meeting and say, oh, I heard somebody say this, I missed the link, can I please have more information, contact Daphne or any of us, okay? Jeff, anything to add to that before we go into meeting proper?
No, I think let's get started and
okay.
Leave some. Hopefully we'll get some time at the end for Q&A, right. But yeah.
Okay, so let me just outline what's happening today. This is a meeting that would explore how to successfully develop an international family law practice with the IAFL in the Asia-Pacific region. So I'd say the obvious, we're all family lawyers, some of us with a greater degree of an international practice, others with an international practice which you hope to increase. But we all have something in common, which is we're familiar with the challenges in this field. Not only are we lawyers, we're social workers, we're psychologists, so to speak, we're confidants, and we just basically do what we can to help the family move on. And in doing so, we're looking for solutions so that litigation is a matter of last resort. So that's what we're all familiar with. But if you add the international element to all of that, that makes it really complex, because particularly the Asia-Pacific is a very diverse region. We're talking about loads of different nationalities, different religions, culture, and of course, very, very different laws. And somehow we have to try to bridge that gap so that the international practice in the particular field that we've chosen is made easier for us. And of course, at the end of the day, the clients. So with that in mind, what I'm looking at now is what we are going to do today, which is we're going to have speakers from seven jurisdictions and dealing with three different elements. So part one would be each of the speakers who will be talking to their top three tips on how to successfully have a practice in international family law. And they will say or give their views from the point of view of advising somebody within their own jurisdiction, how you could better your international practice. Alternatively, their top tips on somebody from outside their own jurisdiction, if you have a case that involves their jurisdiction. So that will be the first item. The second part would be looking at a factual scenario, or we're looking at three factual scenarios of typical types of international family practice where you need, or you have somebody from a different jurisdiction that you need to contact, and how fellows would advise you to deal with this in a way that is best for you and best for your client. And then lastly, part three would be a word about IAFL. So with those three different parts in mind, if I could take you to the first part. And the first part is quite simply, what are your top three tips? And we're going to hear, first of all, from somebody who is from New Zealand and is New Zealand's leading family law, one of New Zealand's leading family law barristers. And she was appointed to the rank of Queen's Counsel in 2014, Anita Chan, QC. Her practice is in complex relationship property and child cases, often with an international element. And Anita is frequently appointed to represent children. She's been a fellow since 2006 and has held various offices within IAFL, and she's now in the Asia Pacific Management Committee. Anita, over to you.
Thanks, Corinne. Kia ora tato, greetings from New Zealand. Can you all hear me? Okay, great. So top three tips. I would say that a good tip would be to link up to someone in your jurisdiction who does have an international family law practice. And a good way to find that person is to, to look on the IAFL website and find who the fellows are in your jurisdiction who, because those people will have international family law practices. So when you've identified the person, see if you can find a way to work with them on an international family law case. And a good way to do that would be to refer or instruct them in a case when you get an international family law case with an international aspect or element, instruct them to act as counsel and ask if you can work alongside them on that case. Tip number two would be to try and attend family law conferences overseas, because that's a really good way to meet overseas lawyers who may refer international cases to you. Try and read up on international family law commentary and cases from within your jurisdiction and outside it. There is a book which we all call the Blue Book, and its proper title is Family Law, a Global Guide from Practical Law, Thomson Reuters, and that's an excellent resource for international family lawyers. Would you like me to go on to top three tips for someone outside our jurisdiction, or is my time up?
Please carry on, Anita.
Okay. So for advice to someone outside of my jurisdiction whose case has connections with my jurisdiction, I would say immediately, at a very early stage, consult a New Zealand international family lawyer, so an IAFL fellow, if possible. Check the Blue Book for an overview of New Zealand law as it relates to international cases, and this will provide you with a good starting point, which will help you to figure out what sorts of questions to ask your New Zealand colleague. The trap in international family law is that you don't know what you don't know. And often that means that you don't know what questions to ask when you are collaborating with your agent overseas. Tip number three is to maintain your collaboration with the New Zealand Council as you go through your case. And you need to make really good use of that. You might, for instance, drill down into how best to secure your client's jurisdiction of choice if New Zealand happens to be the jurisdiction which favours your client or may favour your client. Or you might be asking for advice on whether a foreign prenuptial agreement will be binding in New Zealand. I'll leave it there, Corinne.
Thank you, Anita. That was very, very elucidating, shall we say that. I think we need to bear in mind that it's not easy, but if you get the right advice early on, then you won't fall into the trap of trying to give that advice to somebody when it's not within your own knowledge or your sphere of knowledge. I'm going to ask Linda Heathfield from Hong Kong to speak to us next. Now, Linda is the... We're getting a bit of feedback, Linda.
But sorry, I'll switch.
I'm just going to tell you a little bit about Linda. She's sitting in the room with me now because I'm sitting with Linda in her offices. She is the head of the Family Law Department of Hans Williams. She was admitted to practice a long time ago. I won't tell you how long. Having qualified also in England and Wales and Queensland in Australia. She was previously a partner at a different firm. She's now a partner at this particular firm. And she's been a member of the IAFL since 2007. And formerly was chairman of the Hong Kong Family Law Association in 2010 to 2011. She's built up an international family practice over many years, including children, financial applications, estate and probate practice, as well as advice regarding trusts. So she has a very wide range of work, including nuptial agreements, divorces, jurisdiction and forum disputes, and so on. So Linda, over to you.
Okay, well, very quickly, my top tips to someone in Hong Kong a family law practitioner in Hong Kong is to always bear in mind that because Hong Kong is a very transient city, a large proportion of our family law cases are going to have at least one other connection, probably many other connections around the world. And so it's very important from the beginning of your practice to start to develop relationships with international lawyers of good repute. That's the first top tip. The second top tip, I think, is never assume that because you have been instructed that Hong Kong is the jurisdiction and that it won't be defended by the other party, especially if there are many other options for them. So don't ever assume that. Bear it in mind right from the very beginning. And the third top tip to someone in Hong Kong is do give firm advice to clients on and warnings about the consequences if they are planning on embarking upon a disastrous course of action in relation to the other jurisdiction, because you do not want to be paying for two sets of litigation in two different jurisdictions. So that would be, I think all of those things are preliminary to starting a family law practice in Hong Kong. In terms of someone outside the jurisdiction, I would say to you, if you're liaising with me on the case, think carefully about whether or not it's you who is instructing me or the client, because very often if matters are going on in two jurisdictions, it's really difficult if the client, if I'm getting secondhand information through the client. I actually do need to liaise with the other lawyers. So I think who instructs me is quite important, or the means of the method of communication. I would suggest that you start to build your relationships with us by way of some informal and friendly relationships first, because very often it's quite a simple question that someone's asking me. And quite frankly, I could tell them straight away. I don't have to go and sit down and write an advice. And so to have those relationships means you get a quick answer on something which is really quite basic. And finally, I think that you should always bear in mind that it's not just a relationship with me, it's a relationship with my team, and that being able to contact other people between our two different teams is quite important. It builds that relationship up and it carries it on, and that's part of succession. So those are my three top tips.
Yeah, well, I mean, looking at that, what you said about building the relationship with informal links, that's really important, to be able to just pick up the phone, for instance, and just talk to your counterpart, not have to make a formal letter of instruction. So you can just pick up the phone and say, well, Linda, I've got this case. What do you think about that? And then have a conference with the client before you have to write an advice on all sorts of permutations that may or may not apply in the case. Cheaper and faster is what Linda's saying as well. She's muted, so I'm just repeating that. So that said, having
done... Tomoko.
Tomoko, over to you, Jeff.
Yes, Tomoko. Tomoko Takase is a lawyer in Osaka, accredited by the Japan Federal Bar Association in 2000 and a partner at Arcus Partners. My firm's had the pleasure of working with Tomoko in the past, so... That's one of the benefits that we do enjoy from the relationships that we develop. Tomoko's developed a particular interest in the Hague Convention on the civil aspects of international child abduction. She was a part-time judge in the Kyoto Family Court from 2010 to 2014, specialising in mediation and conciliation. Tomoko's CV has extensive background to her mediation practices in particular. And of course, Tomoko is a fellow of the IAFL. Tomoko.
Thank you, Jeff. I'm Tomoko from Osaka. I'm introducing the three top tips for someone within my jurisdiction, which is Japan. For Japanese people like me, often it's not good at mingling or like talking with other people. So I really think the top one is like make a connection with foreign lawyers in IAFL. And even I think to make friends in IAFL is even better. And for me, like compared to other international conferences, I still feel like much more comfortable in IAFL meetings. And even at the first attendance, I could have a lot of friends actually. So I want the Japanese lawyers join more to the IAFL and also get involved in as many as possible, as many activities as possible in IAFL. And then to the outside of in Japan, I think in Japan, still not so many lawyers deal with international family law cases yet. So to use IAFL member list, that is very, very beneficial to other country lawyers. And you can directly find the lawyers who can do the international family law cases. And also, additionally, I want to say that I'm really proud of being a member of IAFL. So I offer help to other IAFL lawyers even more than I usually do. So you can connect to that. I'm sure Japanese members are similar to my feelings. So you can use the list. It's the best way to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Tomoko. Does that mean if we call you, we'll get free advice? I'm joking. Okay. Next up, could we please
ask Kai-yun.
Kai-yun.
Yes. Kai-yun Wong has a niche practice focused on private wealth and family matters, particularly those with cross-jurisdictional issues. Kai-yun is a fellow of the International Academy of Family Lawyers. She's on our executive of the Asia Pacific chapter, and is also the chapter's delegate to the Board of Governors. Kai-yun practices in Singapore. She's the co-chair of the Family Law Practice Committee of the Law Society of Singapore, and is executive editor of the Singapore Journal of Legal Studies, amongst her many talents. Kai-yun.
Thank you, Jeff. Hi to many friends that I recognize from all over the world. So nice to see you all. I'm going to merge the two questions together. Why is IAFL helpful for us in developing an international practice? Firstly, I can't think of any other organization that's so focused in the area of family law. So whilst there are family divisions in STEP, in Law Asia, in IBA, but in IAFL, we can proudly say family law is our business and our only business. So it's a good organization to be in. And what everybody else has said, within IAFL, we have all formed friends and have had many connections. If you have to fight a case alongside an IAFL fellow or against an IAFL fellow, it's always better to do it with friends. And looking around the room, we have all done that with one another. I think it's very helpful that we have had so many conferences and so many drinks and wine and dine together. If you have to do something really litigious for a very long time, you might as well do it with those whom you have wined and dined with before. And because IAFL has such a rigorous intake requirement, it also means that if you do not know one another, just to have the IAFL branding, you can trust that the lawyer from the foreign jurisdiction from whom you are getting advice, you are getting sound advice from. So you can trust the advisor and you can trust the organization. Okay, so those are my top three tips on why we should all be part of IAFL.
I'm not sure. Not sure I'm prepared to admit I've wined and dined, but I probably have. Jeff. Can you tell us something about what you would say as your top tips?
Corinne, thanks. A lot of the tips have been covered by the others. What I would say is, in terms of a successful international family law practice, I think the fundamental is that you firstly have to be in a position to identify what the international family law issues are. And then you also need to be able to identify the relevant competing jurisdiction or jurisdictions. And then there's some fundamental questions that flow from that. In particular, the jurisdictional requirements and the limits of the courts of each country or state. Will the jurisdiction be exercised? The nature and extent of the relief that's available in the respective jurisdictions. Whether the respective jurisdictions recognise orders made by each other. The enforceability of orders made in the other jurisdiction. The advantages and disadvantages to each party proceeding in each of the jurisdictions and understanding the implications for getting it wrong. And I think others have suggested that. Now, to be able to do that comes, there's two aspects. Firstly, having the knowledge, and that's something that the IFL fosters in many different ways. Having a knowledge bank that's amongst our members that we can tap into through networking and attendance at the many conferences that we've spoken about and webinars, and also the useful resources that are on offer in our website. We have a bank of papers from various conferences that are available to our members. There's also the experience gained from regular exposure to international, the teamwork, the network of leading family law practitioners. And obviously you have highlighted Corinne, and it's available to those who are not familiar with the organisation as to the requirements for admission, which there are certain hurdles to jump, but we have a goal in terms of attracting the leading practitioners from each jurisdiction, for which we then enjoy the benefit of being able to form that fellowship. So I think that's my take on it. It covers both ways. There's comfort in a pair of safe hands, and I think that can be safely said about all of our fellows.
Absolutely, Jeff. I think that the confidence that you get from the fact that your counterpart has been vetted by the organisation already is a huge comfort, because you have to persuade your client to invest some more cash into having an advice from abroad. But that said, that advice from abroad is a really important thing to do, because as was it you, Jeff, or somebody else said, you don't even know what questions to ask.
Yeah, that was Anita.
Oh, it was Anita. Okay, fine. Going back to Anita, she talked about the blue book. I've got a copy here. It's the Bible. It was... I think the general editor is James Stewart, who is a member of IAFL based in England. He has got together more than 20, I haven't counted, different jurisdictions who have summarised important aspects of their international practice in bullet points or in short paragraphs. So if you've got a case that has elements of international practice, for goodness sakes, have a look at this book and see what are the issues, then at least you can begin to formulate questions to your client and put those questions to your counterpart. Get the advice early, and as Linda said, do it in an informal way, if at all possible, because that saves costs. Because at the end of the day, it's the best for your client, the children, the family, and you've got to work out how to deliver it. So I think that's as far as we can go on the first part. I think we now move to the next part of it, which is to pull up some typical factual scenarios. Sadly, can you put the first scenario up on chat? Mm-hmm. The first scenario is a very, very familiar one, abduction. So Alice and Bill have been married for 12 years. They have two children. The children have lived, or the family have lived in jurisdiction X for 2 years. The other party has commenced proceedings for divorce, custody, ancillary relief in that jurisdiction. And after a holiday in jurisdiction Y, Alice has failed to return with the children. What do you do? In that situation, it's a very typical, familiar one. Could I ask, first of all, Kyan? Is it Kyan? Yeah, Kyan. What would happen in Singapore? What would you do if you were acting for Bill in Singapore?
Well, in a situation like this, we would have to instruct lawyers in Japan to do a return application because both countries are signatories to the Hague. But even so, it is important to find someone who knows what they are doing because the language and the systems are so different. So I remember the first few times when I've had cases with Japan, it takes a lot of trust in the lawyers whom you have instructed to believe that their return orders are called habeas corpus, that it's normal for them to have domestic violence allegations. If you try to have access, which is not commonplace, it is called trespass. So being part and parcel of an organization where we trust each other's advice is actually very important for me in those cases. So that would be what I would say, go to IFL and find the Japanese lawyer that you want to instruct to do the return.
Yeah. Jeff, what about Australia? What would happen in a situation like that?
We're in the same position. We're also a signatory. So we'd be invoking the Hague Convention and obviously engaging with one of our seven fellows in Japan, such as Tomoko, to work with ourselves, the central authority, and our client. There's a lot of practical issues, obviously, and I can't go into those at length, but you need to be able to liaise with the suitably qualified colleague in the home state to ensure that issues are dealt with speedily and appropriately upon return, and also in Japan, for instance. So we'd be working together to address a safe and quick return, if that's at all possible. Now, there's some practical issues, and they're well documented. And I think Kyun has highlighted some of the differences in practice, which make this a very difficult area. So it's very important that you engage with an expert in Japan to avoid some of those problems that well documented.
Well, okay, that's the problem that's faced by Bill. Well, what happens if we're looking for a lawyer and we found Tomoko? Can you tell us what you can do to help those two lawyers whose children have been taken to Japan and not returned?
Yes, I can be a representative of the clients and go to apply to the Japanese court. And also sometimes I can advise about the Japanese laws and proceedings to the like Kyun and Jeff, and what happened after like the court proceeding finish. Sometimes, as Kyun mentioned, that in Japan, it's a bit everyone says it's a bit difficult to do that, to return the children even after the court order said return. So those things, I can give the information to the lawyers.
Yeah, and can you help find the child?
Sorry?
Could you help find the children or put them in the right contact?
Finding the children is usually the Japanese Central Authority can help the Kyun and the Jeff. So through the Central Authority, Japanese Central Authority, they actually good at finding the mother and the child. So you can trust that them as well.
Yeah. Okay. Jeff, can you introduce Young, who's our latest and only applicant or IFL fellow from South Korea?
I sure can. Just bear with me 1 minute, sorry.
Yep.
Here we are. So as you said, Corinne, Young is our latest admission to our chapter, and our first fellow from Seoul. He passed the bar in Korea in 1983 and served as a judge advocate from 1986 to 1989. He is and it has been, in terms of past work experiences, an attorney at law at the Korean Bar and also the New York State Bar. He has many strings to his bow, including as a mediator and an arbitrator. So we are delighted, Jan, to have you as a fellow of our chapter, and if you could respond to the question, that would be great.
Jan, thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. South Korea became a signatory of Hague Convention in 2018. As I called the staff of Ministry of Justice, because the Minister of Justice of a central authority under the convention. And I talked with the staffs working for Minister of Justice recently, talk about the convention. Hague Convention actually has been used in South Korea since the implementation of Hague Convention. He said no. There is none of the cases filed in Korea with his authority and the Korean court about the abduction case. So I talked a little about how we could proceed the proceedings under the Hague Convention. He introduced to me regulations and statutes which has been implemented following the signatory of the Hague Convention in 2018. So I looked at it, I read it, and it's very helpful. And in documentation for application of a central authority, it's very difficult for foreign lawyers or any party in foreign country to follow. So I urge to hire local lawyer representing their bill.
Okay, Jan, if we were to hire you to help us in the first case, Hague case in Korea, do you think that the central authorities in Korea could find the child?
Of course. This is the fundamental question should be asked if you hire a local lawyer. To finding the kids, finding the spouses in Korea is the most important, because the court must send the service process to her and the children. If it is under the protection of grandfather, grandmother, then they have to found as well.
Okay.
So the central authority will be very helpful to support the local lawyer to find the kids and the spouses by using police power, and because police is very useful to find any location of the children.
Okay, that said, once the child's or the spouse has been found, can you help the foreign lawyer bring the case or start the case in South Korea?
Yes, so you have to follow the two tracks. One track is application to central authority, which is the Ministry of Justice. And the other case is should file a case with the family court. It's the Seoul family court has exclusive jurisdiction of the abduction case under the Hague Convention. So whether or not the location of a children is local areas or very remote areas from the Seoul capital city. However, the jurisdiction is belong to the Seoul family court. It's right. Very useful for local lawyer to use that, because they don't have to go to travel to local court.
Well, that's very good to know. And I'm hoping that one of you will be the first one to bring a case in South Korea. Let's turn to Thailand. Jeff, can you introduce Roel?
Yes. Roel was also one of our most recent admissions as a fellow of the IFL, and particularly to the Asia Pacific chapter. Roel, sorry, my notes are the case. My apologies.
Focuses on multi-jurisdictional family
disputes. Here it is. My apologies. Yes.
That's right.
Roel specialised in family law for more than 20 years, and practices, as you indicated, in Thailand. And Roel will proudly tell us he's the attorney of choice for foreigners seeking help in the country. So it's a good person to have in the organisation, I must say. He does focus on multi-jurisdictional family disputes, including international divorces, child abduction, and custody battles, amongst his many talents. So, Roel, we'd love to hear from you.
Thank you, Jeff. Okay, for my part, if I represent the parties, let's talk about Bill first. If I represent Bill, since the factual scenario did not mention whether the country wine and eggs are party to the Hague Child Abduction Convention, so I cannot assume if the Thai Center Authority can provide assistance according to such conventions. However, regardless of being party to such conventions, since Alice, the mother, lawfully retained the children, Bill can directly file an application to the Thai family court for the return order. And I would like to talk about the process of seeking assistance according to the Hague Convention. As you know that if the country X, where is the habitual residence of the children, if the party to the Hague Convention, and Thailand also is a signatory member of this convention. So Bill can seek assistance through the Thai Central Authority. But for the process, even though we have enacted the local laws in 2012, which is quite, it's 9 years already. But I would say that the practice through the process through Central Authority for Thailand is still really not so effective. It's very delayed. Starting from when you submit the application to the Thai Central Authority, it's already takes time for the Central Authority to respond to the applicant. And also the process for locate the children and the spouse, it also takes time because the Central Authority would not do this work by themselves. They would rely on the Thai police to locate the children and the spouse. Which from our experience, it could take like 6 months. So this is all the delay of the administrative process. So when it's come to the case like this, I would suggest the client that actually there is another way to speed up the process by filing the case directly to the court by themselves. And that would expedite all the process. Okay, so this is for represent Bill, and the question is also if I represent Alice in the case that she refused to return the children back home. Before any Hague proceed or order, if Alice has an intention to domicile in jurisdiction by, which is Thailand, Alice can file an action seeking for divorce, sole legal custody, and support with the Thai family court. As Thai court would have a jurisdiction when at least one party has a domicile in Thailand. And this intention to change her residence can be in the form of an application for a long-term visa and entering into a long list agreement for the stay in the jurisdiction. This is doable because Thai law permits a person to have multiple domiciles, which is in accordance with the Thai civil and commercial court. So, okay, this is all for my answer.
Thank you very much, Roel. It just seems it's very complicated and it would be great to have somebody on the ground who could advise you there and then. I now take us to the second of the factual scenarios. Daphne, have you got that up? The second is a very familiar one, relocation. So this time we've got Alice back to where the jurisdiction X is, and she's now applied properly to relocate with the children. The court in that jurisdiction would like to make an order for the children, but would like to make sure that there's no conflict in jurisdictions at a later stage if something should go wrong. So to take us to this issue of what we in Hong Kong and elsewhere call mirror orders, I would like to ask Simon to explain something more. Simon is an extremely experienced family lawyer. He's not from the Asia Pacific region, but I regard Simon as almost an honorary one of us because he visits us so often, at least twice a year at the times when we were allowed to fly. He's had six Supreme Court cases, that's from the UK. And the latest one was G&G, which was in March 2021. He's represented the IAFL intervening in various Hague and asylum cases, and he's a mediator, collaborative lawyer. It is in his nature to find amicable resolutions, especially if there's children involved. And to this extent, I'm going to embarrass him that he's giving back to society what he's taken out many, many years as a very high-flying lawyer. He's now works pro bono to help people who need his help. Simon.
Thank you so much, Corinne, for the nice welcome. And hello to everyone from England. I can bring you snow. Seriously, we've had snow in London today. It's actually true. But good news, guys. The pubs are open today. Boris Johnson has opened our pubs. So you know what? We'll be down there. We'll be down there later this evening. And very good news. Haven't been able to have a haircut for 4 months. And they're open. They're open this week. They're all booked out, obviously. But I managed to get a slot in at 8 o'clock on Thursday morning. I offered to pay her double to let me in early. So she's letting me in early to get my haircut on Thursday.
What's wrong with
why on earth? Why on earth would any of you want to come to England or to Great Britain? Well, it's obvious. It's obvious why you want to come to Great Britain, why your client wants to come to Great Britain. We've got the best football teams in the whole world. My team is Liverpool. My team is Liverpool, by the way. We've got amazing white wine. We've got castles. We've got countryside. Yeah. We've got salmon fishing and we've got amazing whiskey. You know, even England can make whiskey, not Scotland. Anyway, sorry, what was your question? Your question was mirror orders.
Yes.
So your mirror orders, you know, you've heard a lot of really, really complicated stuff from all these foreign lawyers. No. Mirror orders are easy. Give us your order that you've got about the children and we'll make it an order in England. It's as simple as that. It was an IFL member, Peter Singer, God bless him. Peter was the first judge in England who made a mirror order in 2000. Anyway, I've done them. I've got the T-shirt. Easy to get a mirror order. We welcome you. Thank you, Corinne.
All right. So, a follow-up. Which of our jurisdictions would look for mirror orders and which jurisdictions would grant them? I'm going to look now to Kayun. No, yes. Sorry, Linda. Sorry, Linda. Yes, Linda.
Does Hong Kong?
Yes, most certainly we do. The issue for us is mostly trying to import the foreign terminology into something which would be recognisable and acceptable to the Hong Kong court, and very often a lot of the content ends up being undertakings or acknowledgements and things like that. But undertakings can be enforced by the court. But generally, we would convert it into as close as we can in Hong Kong terms to the foreign order.
Right. We're running out of time. So I'm going to ask Roll and Young to say what the position is purely by yes or no. Roll in okay. Thailand.
My answer would be no, as Thailand is not a party to international treaty or convention on the matter of recognition and enforcement of foreign judgment. Therefore, Thai court would not make a mirror order recognize or enforce any foreign court judgment. What Alice and Bill can do is to commence an action against the other regarding the custody. And then before the witness examination, the party later can enter into a compromise agreement, which contains the same content with the order from the court in the country X. This alternative is a similar means to the concept of the mirror order in question.
Sorry, I was on mute. Yon, can you answer yes or no?
No, generally a mirror order is not terminology Korean lawyers are okay. Familiar with first.
Okay.
First of all, and the mirror order is if you Hong Kong court, any court, other countries like to receive the same type, you need same order, just as a mirror order, you have to file new case with a Korean court by rephrasing the terms under the mirror order the Hong Kong court is supposed to seek. Mm. In terms of recognition and enforcement of foreign order, foreign judgment, you have to follow general rule under the Korean civil procedure law. It is three questions, conditions should be met. The order, the content of judgment must be accepted under the Korean order, Korean social justice. And the other is should be monetary judgment shall be generally accepted as a foreign judgment enforced and recognized in Korea.
Isn't it?
Yeah, very difficult.
Very difficult. So could I just touch very briefly on enforcement? Daphne, can you get the last of the factual scenarios up? So the last of the factual scenarios is exactly what we're looking at now, recognition and enforcement. Alice having moved to jurisdiction Y, B has refused to comply with financial orders for the spouse and children, and A has refused access. So just very briefly, Kai-Yun, if this was Singapore that they've moved to in jurisdiction Y, would jurisdiction Y, Singapore, enforce those orders and how? You got 30 seconds.
Okay, in 30 seconds, we will not recognize the Japanese financial order or enforce it because our Reciprocal Enforcement Act is only for certain Commonwealth countries. So what you then have to do is exercise self-help as you are getting the Japanese order, put it into that order that it will have to be mirrored in Singapore. So that forms the baseline when you get the Singapore order. Put self-help in there to say that this applies even after relocation so that you don't apply to change the financial orders once you touch down in Singapore, because that becomes material changes. Put in clauses that help you in enforcement, because in Singapore it's notoriously difficult to do enforcement. You have to do a trial, and even after you succeed to show that that was your maintenance order, they pay you in drips and drabs by monthly installments. So you should seek Singapore advice and exercise self-help. Is that in 30 seconds?
Probably 45. Nevertheless. Okay, I'm not going to ask Anita to speak on this because we're going to hear from her at the end. I'm going to move to part three now. Part three is where I would like to ask four speakers to to tell us what they like best about being a fellow of the IAFL. First of all, Ian. Jeff, can you introduce Ian briefly?
Yeah, sure. We're proud of Ian, particularly in the Asia Pacific chapter. Ian's senior partner of Kennedy Partners in Melbourne. He was president of the Academy from 2008 to 2010. Back in Australia, he was chair of the Family Law Section, the Law Council of Australia from 2005 to 2008. He has been recognised on many occasions. He was appointed a member of the Order of Australia in the 2004 Australia Day Honours list for services to law, continuing legal education, and national, international professional organisations, of which we've been the beneficiary. He received the IAFL President's Medal in 2016, and we were proud to award him the inaugural Asia Pacific Chapter Award in 2020. Ian is a good friend of mine, and I say he has influenced me since I became a fellow, and I would say he is probably my mentor in the organisation. So I certainly would like to welcome Ian to speak on this topic.
Ian.
I could say the best thing about the Academy is the nice things they say about you and all the awards they give you. But there are many more things beyond that. And I think the really great things about IAFL have been brilliantly demonstrated in the course of this meeting. And that is primarily the privilege of being part of what is an extraordinary and unique organisation that draws together outstanding lawyers from every continent and from many subsections of jurisdictions, such as the states of the USA, Australia, the Canadian provinces, and creates that network that we've heard about that can be drawn on, that wherever you have a case that has international aspects or multi-jurisdictional connotations to it. The part one bit that we haven't talked about, and that is the strongly developed sense of social conscience and obligation that the IAFL has, and demonstrated through its very close links with the Hague Conference and its interventions in cases involving important issues of international concern in a whole range of courts around the world, from the Supreme Courts of the United States and the United Kingdom to the Superior Courts of France, Argentina and Canada, to mention only a few that we've been involved in within the last 12 to 24 months. But it is a fabulous organisation that provides a wonderful resource for anyone with clients with international aspects to their affairs, but really dominated by the sense of generosity, of collegiality and willingness to leap into the fray and to help in any circumstance. And it's an organisation that I've always been very proud to belong to, that I've had the honour of leading at one stage of my career. And looking at the most wonderful thing about tonight is being able to see so many of my friends from the Academy, both new and old, on screen tonight. So that has been a real treat and something I can recommend very, very strongly.
Thank you, Ian. I echo everything you've said. And just picking up on the one point about intervening in very important decisions and the social conscience leads me to ask Simon to comment on what he thinks is the best part of being a member of IAFL.
So I'm going to mention one word, and that's sunshine. I love the sunshine of foreign law shining on English law. I love it becoming more humane and more liberal. I love the sunshine of friendship, of the lovely smile that I get from Corinne or from Jeff, which is a very precious set of friendships that I have. And I love the sunshine, why? Because we're in England, for goodness sake. We get more rain than any other country, and not even Donald Trump could change that. So I love the sunshine of the IAFL. Thank you, Corinne.
Thank you, Simon. On a different tangent, I'd like to welcome the third of the speakers at the end of our meeting, she's a problem solver, but she's also a bit of sunshine herself. Winnie Chow has helped all of us get on with our clients, whether she's with you on the same side, she's briefed me on many occasions, or she's against you. She takes a realistic approach in relation to her clients and the impact it has on the family as a whole. She looks at resolution and she looks for solutions. And she's been a joy to work for and work with. Winnie. Winnie? Are you muted? You're muted.
Yes, I... Sorry, I thought you were going to say problem maker for a minute and I got really worried.
No.
Thank you for that very kind intro. I'm going to scooch over because you need to watch what's behind me as I talk, please, because I'm going to multitask. There's really, I'm not saying it really is truly the best organization I've ever joined, and I'm going to explain to you why with lots of stories from personal experience. It benefits fellow in a number of ways. Professionally, with the numerous contacts in education, in socially, now start watching my back. And most important, it takes on a bunch of really important initiatives in the development of international family law. For example, forced marriages, making a child's voice heard, LGBTI issues, and we even have an amicus committee so we can make representations in important cases collectively as an organization. Those agree with what many of my fellows and friends have said, and that's, for example, professional has been invaluable to me. You can get almost immediate, instantaneous, high caliber advice in almost any place in the world with speed and ease. And particularly, there's an unwritten rule that if you're a fellow, you help. So you, once you've cleared a conflict, you bypass all those KYC and the forms, and you just help. You can have very easily a very preliminary discussion out of the blue. For example, I've done that with Anita, where I literally rang her out of the blue and got advice from New Zealand. And another example most recently is I had to do a remote hearing here in Hong Kong with Australia, and I will also have one in Los Angeles. And because of the time difference, it was extremely difficult to get proper business centers to operate in an outside of office hours. So these fellows went above and beyond, and they, two of them actually said, just use my office, no charge. So that's another brilliant example that you're not gonna really get anywhere else. And also the fact that everybody is vetted, so you know you're going to get fantastic advice from leading practitioners. And then there's always, of course, the added bonus of working with a friend. They always go above and beyond. From my personal experience, my first meeting was when I was probably about 2 years qualified. I went back then as a guest of my senior partner, and even though most of the fellows thought I was someone's daughter, they were all very, very welcoming. And I specifically recall, and Corinne, I'm sorry, am I running out of time? Should I stop? Where's Corinne? Am I allowed to continue, or have I yes. taken too much time?
Yes, you'll have to pay for this consequences later.
Okay, so at breakfast, I walked in, I didn't know anybody. It was my first meeting, and this very kind gentleman came over and said, just come sit down with us. So I sat down and I had no idea who he was. He just introduced himself as Alan. Then breakfast was over, the bell rang, we all had to go into lecture. And then this very same gentleman then stood up, and then I realized, OMG, it was Sir Alan Ward, Court of Appeal Judge from England. I've read all his authority as a law student, and he was so kind and so humble, didn't say anything and just said, come and have breakfast with me. So that was a very sweet thing to do. We also have a buddy system. So if you're new, the IAFL will assign fellows to look after you, particularly in your first meeting. So, you know, they would then introduce you to people so you don't feel left out in any way. And even with your family members, so often we bring our families. I have two young children. I have brought them to many conferences. I think my child, particularly Charlie, has probably been to more than most fellows. And I remember my first one, in Buenos Aires when he was only 11 months old, and the kindness that all the veteran parents had offered me on that trip when I was literally running around headless with jet lag and 11 months old. And as you can see, as I'm flicking through all the photographs, that these are the kind of photos I have of the wonderful friends that I have made in IAFL. And I, above all, I cherish these friendships. You can see that sometimes we go a little bonkers. And I can also say these friendships are so sweet because this very last photo shows how it transcends to the next generation. And these are some of the children and my Charlie making friends of their own. And that's it.
Winnie, that was lovely. The sunshine you brought in, as Simon has said. I'd like to finish as I started and ask Anita to tell us what she likes best about being a member of the IAFL. Anita, you're on mute. You're on mute. Mute. You're on mute. Yes, okay. You're on.
Also the sunshine. So highlights. A highlight for me, a big highlight, was attending Ian and Sandra's joint birthday party in Melbourne and catching up with them at least once a year for the past 15 years. Ian always travels with a spare hat for me because he knows that I never remember to bring one. Another highlight was traveling from London to Harrogate with Simon by train. Simon is the kindest person I've ever met. And as I am a barely competent traveller, I was worried about getting on the wrong train and ending up in Edinburgh. And I was incredibly grateful to Simon for kindly holding my hand and, though not literally, and getting me to Harrogate. The traditional hunt for flea markets with Winnie in at least 10 different jurisdictions, which gives new meaning to the term jurisdiction shopping. Meeting up with Jeff Wilson for the first time over breakfast in a haze of jet lag on an overnight transit stay in some country, I can't remember which one, and that was on our way to a meeting in Athens. Where was that, Jeff?
Yeah, it was it was in Athens on our way to Crete.
Yeah.
Okay.
You met me at the airport. You saved me. Thank you.
No, I thought you saved me.
Oh, well, that was mutual.
Hanging out with Linda at various meetings. And I have a memory of Linda advising me to buy a particular Lanvin scarf at a flea market, I think, in Strasbourg. Do you remember that, Linda?
Yes, Strasbourg was great.
Going on an incredible road trip with Corinne and Winnie in Portugal, during that trip, Winnie and I accompanied Corinne on a pilgrimage to the ancient town of Remedios. So in other words, the cases that we work on together are amazing, but cases come and go, and the friendship and memories that of shared adventures last forever. And they are without doubt the best thing of being a fellow of the International Academy of Family Lawyers.
Absolutely. I think we all would second that. It's not just work all the time, because being with people you can trust and people you genuinely like and can share your experiences with is the way to go. Just a few bits of housekeeping. I know we're a bit 10 minutes over the hour now, but somebody asked how to order the blue book. We will find out. The person who would like to know, other people who would like to know, please contact Daphne. Her email is on the chat. So save your chat by pressing the little box with a dot, 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 dot. Do you see that at the bottom? Press that, and that will save your chat. And then you can pick up Daphne's email from there. Daphne will find out, or Ali will find out, and we will let you know, okay? So if there's more than one person who wants to know that, we will certainly let you know. It's something that we can find out. been a lot of talk about all the collegiate atmosphere at various meetings and the possibility that you could attend as a guest. You can't come unless you're a member of the IAFL, a fellow, alternatively, if you're a guest of that fellow. So if you'd like to check us out and see what we're like at our meetings, do cozy up to a member and invite your, get them to invite you as a guest. And then you can see, and just like Winnie turning up at breakfast, sitting next to Sir Alan Ward. Our next meeting is in New Orleans. We've had to cancel all our meetings until then. It's February of next year. So make a note of the dates. I think it's the 16th, and I'm going to be corrected on that point because it's a USA and Canada meeting, but it's being shared together with the IAFL main body. And I'm mentioning that because I see our president has been in attendance throughout today's meeting. Marlene Moses is the president of the whole shebang, and she lives in the middle of America, and she joined us at 5 a.m. her time. So we are really honored to have Marlene there. Marlene, is it at on the 16th of February till the 20th?
It is, Corinne, and we will let the good times roll in New Orleans. So please come join us. You're all invited. It's 2 weeks before Mardi Gras. So you'll have some Mardi Gras experience. The food is fabulous. It has a European kind of feel. Music, jazz music, blues. It's a real cultural experience. The Mississippi River runs through the city, and I promise a good time. And we will also have continuing legal education as well.
Brilliant. Well, I think we all look forward to that. If we're there as a fellow or there as a fellow's guest to check us all out, one way or another, let's try to meet up and bring a bit of IAFL spirit. Jeff, have you got anything further to add to what we've talked about?
Oh, Corinne, just on the meetings for the Asia-Pacific region, we've got Bangkok coming up next year. The year after that, venturing into my hometown in Brisbane. And 2024, for all of our friends across the ditch, Anita and I are planning a meeting in Queenstown. So obviously for those of our friends on board tonight from New Zealand who are interested in becoming fellows, we'd welcome that, but also start planning for 2024 and get in touch with Anita and myself, as we'd welcome any help in that regard. Just finally, Corinne, obviously we've skimmed the surface of what the organisation is about. The website for the Academy has a lot of information apart from what was shown early on in tonight's meeting. Some of the things that the organisation does, we have many committees with a very diverse group of people on board those committees, and we cover many areas of our practice. It's another good way of forming close relationships and also having some meaningful involvement with the organisation. So if you go onto the website and go through the various portals, you'll find a lot of information about what we do apart from what we discussed tonight.
Yeah.
But apart from that, Corinne?
Well, okay. So can I close on a mafioso type approach? For the benefit of your client, and in true tradition, keep your friends close.
Yeah.
Keep your enemies closer. Thank you for being here. Goodbye, everybody, and hope to see you soon.